Before we start our episode on Fenway Park, I would like to respond to a listener question right off the bat, because this is the number one question I keep getting emailed to me about Fenway. So let me just say, I don't know why you want to do this, but if you're really set on parking your car at Harvard Yard, a couple things to keep in mind. Number one, parking is not allowed in Harvard Yard. If you try, you'll probably get towed and possibly arrested. I think the closest you will get is the ProPark Holyoke garage across the street. But then still, number two, I don't think this is the best, most efficient idea to get to the Red Sox game. I mean, you're out in Cambridge, and then you have to take the red line and transfer to the green line. I just think there are other places to park much closer to the ballpark. Anyway, today we're shipping off to Boston to visit one of the most iconic venues in all of sports. We're going to check out the Green Monster, the Pesky Pole, the Triangle, the Citgo Sign, the Lone Red Seat, and Williamsburg. It's Fenway Park, home of the Red Sox, on this week's episode of Ballpark Road Trip. This is Ballpark Road Trip. If you're listening to this podcast, you like ballparks, or you're planning on visiting a ballpark sometime in the future. Well, you've come to the right place. Here on the show, we will be traveling around to each major league city, talking to locals who know their home ballparks inside and out. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Ballpark Road Trip. I'm your host, Jacob Russell Snyder, and this week is literally a classic. Fenway Park opened in 1912, and it just keeps getting older. And that is how time works. Thanks for joining us on the show. We'll see you next week. No, but seriously, Fenway is the oldest park in the majors, and that is apparent as soon as you see the ballpark from the outside. In fact, although for most people, when you tell someone to picture Fenway Park in Boston, my guess is they are probably picturing the inside with the famous Green Monster. But for me, it's always going to be that brick facade on Jersey Street with the Fenway sign, the green roll-up doors, and the red and blue banners. That's how I was introduced to Fenway Park as a kid. Pictures of Fenway in books and postcards, glimpses in Field of Dreams when Ray takes Terrence Mann to a baseball game, an intimate neighborhood park that looked like it could be the outside of an early 20th century factory. Walking down the city street, you might not even know that you are standing in front of a ballpark. I think I read a story that Roger Clemens, at his first time going to the park, thought he had been dropped off in front of a warehouse. But that was the first thing that fascinated me about Fenway Park. So, I lived in Boston from 2013 to 2015, and I've been to Fenway about 4 to 5 times and taken the ballpark tour. But since we're going in order, the first time I visited would have been May of 2004, making it ballpark number 12 on our list. I was living in New York City at the time, now 2 years out of college. I was enjoying my time in the Big Apple, working for a Broadway producer, dating my college girlfriend, seeing underground comedy shows at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater with the likes of Amy Poehler, Tina Fey, and others from Late Night. I also spent my time watching plenty of baseball. In October 2003, I remember being in bed at midnight in Queens trying to hear the end of Game 1 of the ALDS in Oakland as Ramon Hernandez laid down a walk-off bunt for the A's to win the game against the Red Sox so I could finally go to sleep. Man, it's got to be a difficult sports life living on the East Coast, not being able to catch the end of games on the West Coast when your team travels. We don't have to talk about who won that series, but I also caught games at Shea Stadium and Old Yankee Stadium once the 2004 season began. As I mentioned in a previous episode, I also took a weekend in April to visit brand new Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia. But once the 2004 baseball season started, there was no way I was going to be living on the East Coast and not drive up to see Fenway Park. Now, 2 years out of college working for peanuts in New York, I needed a cheap visit. So I decided to go overnight, Saturday to Sunday. I found a cheap hotel in Newton, Massachusetts, and drove there on Saturday, spent the night, then the next morning, I took the Framington-Worcester commuter train straight to the ballpark. I was pretty happy with the seats I got. They were on the first base side, past the bag, in the second deck. I believe they are now called the roof boxes. They were a little cheaper, and I didn't feel too claustrophobic, which was one of my worries sitting down on the first level. And they turned out to have a really fun vantage point. Like Wrigley, it's a pretty intimate park, so sitting in the second deck at Fenway gave me a really nice elevated view of the field and a great view of the green monster across from me. What I remember the most about that game was the first inning. Johnny Damon got on, Mark Bellhorn got on, and then you had two on, no outs for David Ortiz and Manny Ramirez. The crowd really getting into it. That's when I remember thinking, wow, this team is pretty dangerous. What a potent offense. 5 months later, this Red Sox team would win the World Series and break the curse. But now for a deeper dive into what there is to see, do, and eat at Fenway Park, we turn to Ryan Matthews.
Fenway Park.
Ryan, you are a Fenway Park employee, or what is your connection with the Red Sox or with Fenway Park?
Well, I'm a lifelong fan. That was instilled in me by my father. It's a family tradition around these parts. But I am a Fenway Park employee. I'm speaking for me today. I'm not speaking on their behalf, but these opinions are my own. But I am I work first aid. I'm a paramedic that works first aid inside the ballpark during games and events and other things.
Nice. That's great. Yeah. And absolutely, we will make very clear that I'm having you on as Ryan the fan. That's absolutely what I want. Yeah. I love people who have a connection with the team or the ballpark because their knowledge can be sometimes be deeper. But I'm looking for fan perspective. So this is great. How many games do you think you get out to a year if you're having to work as well?
Part of being able to work the games, we get to sit out there at various points in the field. So there are, when there's a home game during the summer between April and October, hopefully October, there's a rare case where I'm not there. I work a job that allows me pretty much to have most of my summers off because I work in education. So I have pretty much from May, and once May hits, I just go into Red Sox mode. And so I am one of the people who's on that team who's kind of done it sort of the longest. So I kind of get my pick of shifts. And like I said, me not being at a game or a non-game event is the exception, not the rule. So I would like to say most of them. I don't have an exact number for you.
Now, I used to work guest services for the Oakland A's, and that meant that we were like at different guest services booths in the Coliseum. And sometimes you had a good booth where you had a view of the field, but most of the times you're in places where you're either watching on TV or listening. Are you able to catch any of the game while you're working, or are you in a place where you need to find out via radio or whatnot?
No, so we have, when we're working, we have anywhere between three or four teams, plus some nurses and a few doctors actually in the first aid room. But where we are, we're doing the actual, we're out amongst the fans in the ballpark. I usually view the games from kind of a perch. It's actually an old camera well that's no longer used for that purpose. Me and a partner will sit in grandstand section 17, which you could say that it's kind of far back by Fenway standards, but it's actually fairly close to home plate. And if you've ever been in Fenway Park, is actually everything is very intimate. You're unless you're seated right behind a post, you're right on top of everything anyway. So we're a good few rows back, but you feel like you're right on top of the action. You can hear the crack of the bat. You can hear these guys swearing when they strike out. So we're in a good spot.
Now, if you were going to the game another way. Let's say you were just going as a fan. Somehow you got a night off or a shift off. You wanted to do a special occasion and go as a fan. Where would you like to sit if you had your chance? Or where did you like to sit before you started working for the Red Sox?
Like any ballpark, it depends on the experience you're looking for. If you want to get a good, authentic, sort of old time baseball experience in Fenway, you got to go out to the bleacher section. And again, that seems like, those are the cheaper seats in most ballparks. But again, it being Fenway Park, you're still feel like you're on top of the action. You're right there behind the bullpens, which are called Williamsburg at Fenway. There's a story behind that too, and you're out there, and that's sort of where the like the real. That's where a lot of the younger fans sit. Like they have the student nines where they have the high school and college kids come out. So you get a lot of energy out there. It's somewhat less family friendly, I'd say, but it's a lot of fun if you want that authentic experience. If I'm thinking other than that, I would probably I my preferred place to take seats would probably be in the probably in the loge boxes in along anywhere along the third baseline. It's just based for a lot of reasons. You're that's basically where just being a person who spends a lot of time in that park, everything from on a day game, that's you're a little shielded more from the sun from that angle. I just sort of like that angle to watch baseball. It's kind of my own personal preference, but I would say anywhere in the bleacher section or anywhere in the third baseline.
Now, those other seats that you're talking about, the Lojo. So there's Fenway looks like it's got a pretty small second deck. So is the left field, the Lojo you said on not left field, but third base side that you said, is that any different than what you'll find on the first base side? Are those different kinds of seats?
No, it's pretty those seats, they're pretty equal on either side in terms of like, amenities, what you'll find. I think in terms of like actual things like amenities, concessions and whatnot, I think you'll actually find them matched evenly on each side. They try and have like a duplicate of everything on either side of the building, to the best they can. But I just prefer it. That's where my father always took me. And again, I just notice when I'm out there, I think maybe some of the similar reasons, if you just know like the way the sun hits the park at an afternoon game, you're not roasting in the sun out there because Fenway Park's a lot of fun, but it's not necessarily built with comfort in mind. That's a little bit of a caveat. I think most people are aware when they come out here, they know that's kind of a thing. But so my preference for it is I couldn't tell you specifically why. I just like it, from that, it's just everything from the angles, what you can see from where, and everything from just considerations of where the sun hits you on a hot July day. So.
Yeah, let's talk a little about that, about some of those caveats, because that is something that, these older ballparks do have. You've got posts and you've got obstructed view seats. But let's talk weather first. What part of the stadium gets the sun all day in a day game, do you think?
So you have the opposite problem on the other side. So basically anywhere along the first base section, you will have the sun in your face most of the afternoon, most of the day. Like I said, the spot that I actually just kind of played up out in the bleachers, you're out there. There is no cover above you. There is no grandstand. There's no roof above you. So you're getting rain, shine, you're getting all of it. So the seats are, some, a lot of those sections, they're old wooden seats from the 1930s. A lot of ballparks don't have those. A lot of people think they're charming. A lot of people think they're terrible. Just depends on what kind of person you are. The building itself, it's not built for efficiency in terms of, I don't know, ventilation sort of, so it doesn't, on hot days, if it's hot outside the ballpark, it's about 10 degrees hotter inside. If it's cold, it's about 10 degrees colder. We don't know why. It's just the way the lay of the building. And working in there, I always tell new people, I said, they give us a nice heavy winter coat. Bring that until about the beginning of June if you're working a night.
Do you think you have to worry about being surprised with a with an obstructed view seat, or is that something that you buy an obstructed view ticket and you know that you are going to have a pole in your way?
I've never purchased one specifically. I've seen them. I've been told that people have been surprised, although I think it does, for it's, for obvious reasons, it does actually state on the ticket, this is obstructed view. I think they're a good deal cheaper. I think what happens is in some of the online secondary, tertiary markets that are sold on, maybe they don't pass that information along. We've definitely had people who have kind of come in and made a stink about it. It's like, oh, I bought these tickets, thought they were a great deal, and I realize I'm behind the pole, and but I do think as far as the team goes and as far as, like the more official, like the MLB apps that you would buy tickets through, they're pretty good about letting you know about that. I think it's the third party apps that are really kind of letting people down on that front.
So you come regularly. So, you know, the people who are going to be listening to this podcast are probably coming into town to visit. But how do you get to the games on a regular basis?
So I live in the city of Quincy, if you know the area. I'm not going to presume anyone does. It's basically the next town over from Boston. Still can be a challenge to get there. So I drive in and I park. Parking can be had if you know how to do it. I mean, like any ballpark, it can be 40, 50, $60 to park right there on game day. I recommend, because I know everyone won't find the garage I use and have that knowledge. You know, Boston, for what it is, it's a great walking city. And you know, it's had some issues lately, but generally the local the T, which is the local public transportation system, will pretty much get you anywhere you want to go. So people who are not familiar with the area, I say if you're not staying down the road from the ballpark and you can walk, I say go in. There's a you know the T stations are all around. I say take the red line up to the green line, and that's the classic, you know, take the green line over to Fenway. It's a lot of trains over there, but it's pretty easy. You take any train but E. There'll be multiple trains moving through that station at one time. They're all trolleys. They're above ground trolleys on that section of the city. Any train that doesn't say E, just get on it. It'll take you to Kenmore, and you'll be right there. And you'll walk out of the station. You'll see the CITGO sign and know right where you are.
Perfect. And
So
that sounds like kind of the way that you want to do it just for also experience, you know,
Oh,
you
for sure. Oh yeah,
yeah.
that's just like what I said about the bleachers. You want to ride with, you know, have an experience, you know, like, you know, for the people with the fans, you know, on a game day, you're going to be riding in a train car full of Red Sox fans, you know, and so you get that too. And both ways, you know, on the way out, you'll see, you'll go down to the station. You know, one of the best things that they still do all these years later, even though that rivalry, well, we'll see tonight, but you know, they say the Red Sox Yankees rivalry, you'll go down in that train station after a game, after the Red Sox win, you'll walk onto the platform. You could have just played Kansas City, and for some reason, everyone in that train station will be chanting the Yankee suck chant. You won't know why, but it'll be fun. And so, it's a true baseball experience, and I can't reiterate that enough.
So for those few people who are driving, do you feel comfortable sharing your secret garage spot, or is that something that you need to keep for Boston locals?
I don't know if I'll give you the exact address. I'll tell you there's a few garages that, you know, near the and lots near the where they'll kind of gouge you. You got to go about not even that far. Get a nice walk. It's about half a mile, maybe 3/4 mile away. Down by there's a cluster of hospitals,
Cool.
right down there. Boston Children's Hospital, Brigham and Women's, Beth Israel. There's a few garages in there that you can get away with prices as low as, you know, $15, $20, even on a game night.
We'll
So if
let
they hit
people do their research from there. That sounds
Head down to
fine.
the Longwood Medical area, and that's the hint I'll give you. And then you'll find a little bit cheaper parking. And if you don't mind legging it out about half a mile, maybe 3/4 of a mile in a straight line, like you'll be fine. So, yeah.
So do you eat at the ballpark? Do you try to eat before you go out there, or do you bring stuff with you?
So yeah, we have a bit of a, you know, not it's interesting because not every we have a different sort of setup on our medical team. I don't know who decides or who gets it and who doesn't. Our team is actually served lunch or dinner depending on the time of whether it's, you know, depending on the day of game. Like we actually get to have dinner up on level 5, which is actually the media dining area. So,
Oh, cool.
which is kind of cool. So it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of there's certain employees that get to eat there, but it's actually a cafeteria that's made for the media. So you'll see, you'll walk in there and you'll be talking to, you know, sports writers. You'll see TV personalities in there. One of the interesting things happened to me last year, God bless him, but you know, he sat down just about a year ago now. He sat down and you know, we were sitting having lunch and guy walks over to our table and asked if he can sit down, and it's Tim Wakefield. He had been
Oh,
working for
cool.
NASA, and he just asked to sit down and have lunch with us, and he just sat down like a regular guy. And those people you see in there, you'll see Joe Castiglione, you'll see Jerry Remy before he unfortunately passed as well. So it's pretty cool place.
So for those people who are not able to have food at the media dining room,
Yes.
where do you recommend? Well, let's start actually before the game. Do you recommend any places before or after the game to hang out and maybe get your day started or your evening started?
Absolutely. Both before and after the game, you know, that's, you know, it's like any, you know, this is a, you know, there's a neighborhood built up around Fenway. There's some, you know, restaurants and bars that I frequent. You know, me and my colleagues will get out of a game, especially if it's a day game and we get out in a decent time in the afternoon. we'll go and we'll go for, you know, a couple of beers and some food right down the road. One of our favorite places is actually a little cool detail I can share with you is a place called the Bullpen Kitchen. It's actually right on Jersey Street, which is the main drag that Fenway is on. It's surrounded by Five Street, but that's sort of the main one if you're orienting yourself. And that's a street that's blocked off basically. You know, that street is, you know, it's blocked off to vehicular traffic and it's a ticketed entrance. So basically, when you're on that street on game day, you're still inside the park once you've been ticketed. There's this bar, it's called the Bullpen Kitchen. That's a ticketed entrance on game day. So you can walk in there and you can have a beer. You can walk in the front side and they'll check your ticket. You can go in there and have a beer, have a burger, whatever, and you are inside the park on game day.
Nice.
They're pretty good to us when we go down there too. It's a good another place. It's for you get that hometown feel. You'll be drinking with a lot of Red Sox fans if you can handle it. So
Have
very
you ever been to the center field bar? What's the deal with that? Is that
oh,
outdoor
the
or
Bleacher
out of
Bar.
the yeah, is that out of the stadium? Is that a part of the stadium? Same thing? How does that work?
So that is not the same what I was just describing. It is physically located inside Fenway Park. It's actually in the space that was previously in past years occupied by the visitors' batting cage until it was moved, I think, in around 2013. And there was a vacant space. So now if you're on Lansdowne, which is the other famous side, which is the street that's under the Green Monster, you can walk in and there's a place that's well marked. It's the Bleacher Bar, and you walk in and there's a big roll-up door, and you can go get your drink, and you can sit and you can look into the ballpark. And it's open most like during like I think they shut it during the game. You can still see out there, but when there's not a game happening here, they'll open up the door and you can just look into and feel like and smell the grass. And it's just a window, literally a window into the ballpark. That's a cool place too. I didn't
But
even
you don't
think of
need any
that.
kind of admission ticket or anything for that.
No.
That is.
And you don't actually need to, and the one I described, you actually don't have to have a ticket to get into on game day either, but you can't come up on
Just
the
to
Jersey Street
pass
field
the line that
to
goes into the actual
verify that. Yeah.
stadium.
But
Gotcha.
the Bleacher Bar that you're describing, that's on the other side. That's not a, you know, it's not a closed street. That's still
Yeah.
there's still so you can walk right in off the street. You know, even if you just sit, even if you don't have tickets to the game, you can go in there and get a pretty good glimpse of the park.
Cool. How
It's
about
fun.
merchandise? Is that also outside? Is there a big merchandise store either right next door or right a part of this? Is I feel like I remember that when I visited.
So there are a few sort of like satellite locations inside the park and kind of across, but there's the big right on Jersey Street, like I described. There's the big it's actually an old, very old, just almost as old as the park itself, kind of a big old, kind of an ugly building. And it contains, you know, a very, very large, shopping area. It's the Red Sox team store. It's actually the I believe it's the flagship store of 47 Brands, which makes a lot of sports and baseball gears. You probably know the brand. So I think that's actually their flagship store as well. That's actually about two doors down from the bar I just described, right on Jersey Street. So that's a good big wide floor. You know, like you get anything you want, or even a polo. You can even buy a Yankee shirt in there. So not just Red Sox stuff. If you're not a fan, you forgot your shirt that day, you could probably get an A shirt in there on game day if you forgot one.
So maybe people have been to a pregame spot, maybe they haven't, and they're still hungry inside. The two hot dogs I'm really familiar with that like you are named after either where you're from or the team. You got your Dodger dogs and your Fenway Franks. People now talking to LA folks, they're not happy with their Dodger dogs anymore. How do you feel about a Fenway Frank? Is that something to try or something
That
to
is, you know, it that is you if you go in there and you don't get one, you don't get a hot dog and a beer on game day, you know, and some, you know, and just a bag of good old just regular salted ballpark peanuts, then you're missing part of the experience. The Fenway Franks, they're not just, you know, random hot dogs they just get from some supplier. I mean, they are from a supplier, obviously, but
Right.
they're manufactured locally. So they're a local
Cool.
brand. They're kind of like that old style hot dogs with the, you know, with the real casing on them. So when you bite into them, they kind of got that snap. You know,
Nice.
they're,
Oh yeah, that's great.
yeah, so
So
they're the real.
it sounds like you are in the camp of, traditional ballpark fare. Do you ever go for like the new concoctions or creations that a ballpark might have that year, or do you stay away from those kind of crazy artery clogging?
I am, as you picked up on, I'm more of a traditional guy. One thing I tried this year that I liked is it's sort of a nod to the, you know, sort of the, if you, you know, Boston area, it's got sort of a historical connection to Ireland. So they have what they call, they just started this year and they're pretty good. It's they serve what are called, you know, their Irish nachos, and they're it's nacho cheese over waffle fries with corned beef and sauerkraut, and it's top notch. So
Corned beef and sour. Oh, that's great. I haven't had that combination at another ballpark. That sounds pretty
yeah,
good.
and again, if you want to splurge, I don't know where you'll necessarily get it better. I mean, but I'd still out of my even though I'm from around here, but you know, if you come in here from out of town, you know, they'll serve you both a hot and a cold lobster roll. They'll do like a hot buttered one and a cold lobster salad. So you can, if you want to get that New England feel, you can do that. If you want to spend, I don't know what they go for now, but it'll cost you more than the hot dog will. So if you're looking for that, there's some other, you know, little New England favorites in there, but
Yeah,
yeah.
fantastic.
Yeah.
So I know you're busy working the game, but you know, when you were a fan, is there any place, you know, it's a small ballpark. Is there any place to walk around during the game or anything to see during the game? Or is that something you should take care of in like a ballpark tour before the game even starts?
Well, first and foremost, I definitely recommend the ballpark tour. It is, you know, they will take you to places like, you'll see, if you're a baseball fan, you don't even have to be a Red. I tell people all the time, you don't have to be a Red Sox fan to be a Fenway fan. And if you respect baseball and you love baseball and you respect really the history of sports, I recommend taking that tour. But even on game day, like there are things you can walk around and see. Like it is, you know, it's not improper to describe Fenway Park as a living museum. Like you walk in there, you'll be walking along and you'll just see, oh, what's this big, you know, copper metal thing? And you'll look and there'll be this plaque and it says, oh, this was originally put here. This was the hot water tank for the visitors clubhouse. And it'll just be a plaque of when it was put there. They'll have at gate A, they'll have the old turnstiles and the ticket boxes. And then they don't use those for those purposes anymore, but they're still there. I think each one is now sort of a little diorama. You look into the booth and it like
Oh,
shows like a
cool.
different era in Fenway Park history and some of the artifacts from that time. But it's like you can be surprised. I kind of like I laugh, I call it, it's a little bit like Hogwarts. Like you'll just be walking through the concourse and you'll see like, oh, there's this brick wall and there's this door that goes to nowhere, and there'll be a plaque indicating that it's a door that doesn't that it is a door to nowhere. So they'll note it and they'll say what it was, the original layout of the park in 1912. And after the fire in the 30s, they stopped using it, and here's why. So there's so many little quirky little things you can just walk around and find.
Wow, that's cool. So, since the recent renovation where they added the monster seats and whatnot, what's been your favorite aspect of that renovation?
Oh, like I said, the monster seats themselves are were a huge addition that people. You know, people come to see Fenway anyway, but there's people who now like, oh, well, now the people know the Green Monster, but they can sit on it. So that just kind of enhanced sort of that bucket list sort of draw that that wall has, that
Right,
you can actually
right.
sit on it. That was a huge detail. But they also in that, you know, in that same time frame when they added those seats, they actually opened up certain parts of the concourse that were not opened up like the way they are now. There used to be fencing that separated some of it, and they just opened it up into what's called the big concourse. On the other side, on the far left field corner, there is a, you know, it's another, it's actually a separate building, or it was two separate buildings probably back till the 1930s, where it was, you know, there was an old car dealership in there that they incorporated into the ballpark, and that section has like a whole bunch of that's where a lot of the specialty foods are. And there's another gate over there you can enter through, and there's just some cool, and again, it's just those little quirks. There's a you can actually see, I'm trying to think of what section it would be, and I don't have the number and section right off the top of my brain, but another one of those really quirky things, you can actually walk through this little tunnel that's completely accessible to fans, and there'll be a plaque explaining why it's there. It's just this crack, and it was originally this spot where the two buildings used to meet. It used to be the end of Fenway Park, and this is where the other brick building started. And now you're walking on this bridge between the two.
Whoa.
And it explained that it was originally put there for media purposes, so they could sneak around and the radio guys. And there's some, and again, you just gotta. My biggest advice, if you're there for that historical thing, is every time you see a plaque, read it.
Were all these plaques part of the renovation, or were they doing this kind of thing beforehand?
I think a lot of them were added in the, like I said, in that prior to 2014 when you said you were there. But they, I mean, it was definitely something that when the new ownership group came in the early 2000s, they were like, okay, you know, like the other guys had this. We all know it's old. We all know it's Fenway, but like no one really treated it like a museum. And that's one thing that you got to give the group that owns it now credit is they turned it into the museum it is. Like everybody knew it was old. And if you knew baseball, you knew who played in there and what it was all about. But they're the ones who made it like friendly Fenway. They made it, you know, they brightened it up a little bit. You know, they made it more like a place you want to bring your kids and like I said, and the place you want to go be a tourist at, not just a baseball fan, you know. So that a lot of that is stuff that happened in, you know, the early to mid 2000s, I would say, yes.
Let's talk about bringing your kids to the game. And that reminds me of a question that I like to ask every team around baseball. Can visiting fans feel comfortable wearing their colors to the game?
Absolutely. No. Yeah. No. I actually get that question a lot. Like, I mean, you'll see it on some of like, you know, like on the ballpark, you'll see the page we follow. I always kind of like cringe when I see that question. Oh, is Fenway safe? I'm like, yeah, you know, millions of people come see Fenway a year. It's safe. You can walk there at night around the neighborhood. It's not, you know, you don't get sketchy vibes. You can wear your opposing colors. You know, like I said, we're one half of what we like to consider the greatest rivalry in sports. You know, we have the Yankees fans come in, they wear their gear. It's a 4-hour drive for them. They come up. Our guys go down and do the same. Very rarely are there any issues on that front. My biggest recommendation, this isn't just for Fenway, it's for any ballpark. Try to wear the shirt or the hat of one of the two teams playing. Because I go in there and it's, you know, on Red Sox or the Orioles, and I see, you know, a Padres shirt. And I'm like, oh, come on, man. You know, but I wouldn't have any concerns about safety or anything like that. You might get a few jeers, you know, like, you know, but it's no one's gonna put you at risk or anything like that. The security team there is top notch. It's a good family friendly place for sure.
That's cool. What about other traditions? I mean, everyone knows about Sweet Caroline. What inning does that come in? Is that a seventh inning stretch thing, or is that a different time in the game?
That's a different time of the game. So seventh inning stretch, they'll do like most ballparks, they'll do their rendition of Take Me Out to the Ball Game. And that'll be in the mid seventh inning. And then, you know, and then Sweet Caroline plays without fail in the mid eighth. So that's
In the
probably
middle
the
of
biggest
eighth.
tradition that everybody knows about.
What are your winning songs, or your what do they play at the end of games?
Dirty Water. Love that Dirty Water. That's the a lot of Boston sports teams use that now. I think the Red Sox started that trend, but the Bruins will use that now. I think the Celtics do it too. So you hear that opening riff, you know,
Yeah.
it's a good night. And then after that, they'll play, if you're familiar, if you're a baseball guy, which you are, they'll immediately go from that. And then they'll play Tessie, which is the Dropkick Murphys song. It was a very old turn of the century song that they sort of refurbished for the 2004 World Series. And that's kind of still a celebrated anthem in there. And then for
Is that
whatever
when it
reason,
started? Is that from the World Series
it
year?
wasn't, it was, it, I think it was actually put out in 2003 when they almost made it. And the Dropkick Murphys produced the song, knowing the history of the song. Like the history of the song is that it was an old Broadway tune, I think, that these guys were these old party old Red Sox fans were repurposing with their own words, basically to taunt other teams. And it was credited with winning the first World Series in 1913. So that's
Oh, nice.
so
Oh,
that
there you
so I
go.
so it was ironic that in 2003 the Dropkick Murphys revived it, and then in 2004 the whole, you know, reverse the curse thing happened. And so there's some kind of magic that definitely happened there. So they still play that. So any night where
Cool.
they win, they'll play Dirty Water, followed by Tessie, followed by I still haven't figured out why, but Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog by Three Dog Night.
Three Dog Night, not a Boston band? I don't
I don't think they are.
know.
So, but that's just the standard. And then once those three songs play, they'll play a few, you know, Josh Cantor on the organ, get that old timey baseball organ. He'll just play everyone out. That's the
Nice.
other really cool thing. One of my favorite parts about Fenway still is just listening to that old, you know, hand played organ up there. It's just, you get that vibe, and it's pretty special.
That's great.
So.
Got two more questions for you.
Sure. Sure.
First question, these are questions that I ask everyone. First question is, if people come into town, whether it's a family or maybe just a fellow chaser who's coming in trying to knock off the ballpark, do you recommend a Friday night, a Saturday game, or a Sunday afternoon game?
I'm going to go on a limb here because it's funny because it's actually going to sound it's going to sound contrary to some of the things I said about that, you know, that real baseball experience. You want to get that rowdy, you know, baseball experience, you go on a Friday night. Whereas I find some of the most fun games the most because a lot sometimes they're day games. A lot of times they're day games, so they're played earlier. I like day games. I'm partial to day games. So a lot of times you go in, it's on a Sunday. It's just a little, you know, the traffic getting into town is easier, and everything just feels easier on a Sunday morning. You know, I would recommend Saturday or Sunday, but definitely like my favorite games to be there, even when I'm working Sunday afternoon all day.
I lived in Boston for like a year, and I don't remember this. Are there any drinking laws on Sundays or things that people have to be aware of if they are going to the game, or do things close? What is that?
No, so the Boston is sort of famous. There's no specific laws anymore. There used to be a law in Massachusetts where you couldn't purchase. A private person couldn't purchase alcohol on Sundays. I don't think it ever affected bars, but that's not the case anymore. But even then, you know, bars, they might on a Sunday, they'll definitely be open for the game, but they might close early like any business, but I don't think you'll run up to the only thing you worry about on any night that's not just a Sunday problem is, you know, bars in Boston famously close at 1 o'clock. They stop serving drinks. So
Gotcha.
lots of these don't have that problem. That's something that Boston hasn't quite figured out yet. It's an old Puritan thing, I guess.
Do you
So
guys have happy hours in Boston?
we don't, and it's interesting because that's actually a major political debate right now is like, can we, you know, there's people on Beacon Hill trying to bring back happy hour to Massachusetts. There's actually a state law that prevents happy hour specials from being served. They get around it by saying like, okay, we can't do happy hour special on drinks, so we'll just do food deals, you know, like half price
Right.
tabs or something. But so it's all the same. It works out in the end, but it's weird. It's that old. Out of any, a lot of states have them, but Massachusetts and Boston is no exception. You know, it has its own version of it, but you know, we have a little bit of that old that Puritan flair, I guess, a little bit of
That
tinge
Puritan
of their
influence.
sensibilities, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. My final question is, what is your favorite thing about Fenway Park?
It's that X factor. I was kind of hoping, but also like almost dreading if you asked me that because I couldn't tell you. I know that I work in there, and I said at the beginning of the interview, I said how often I'm there. I feel like I'm there more than my own house these days, but which is not a complaint by any stretch of imagination. But for me, I still get the same when I walk in there, when I show up for work. You know, before I go to the first aid room to get my gear and set up, I always walk through the concourse and I just walk up onto the ramps and I just like look out on the field, look at the grass, and I get the same feeling I did when I was 7 years old, 6, 7 years old, my father first brought me in there. It doesn't stop being cool. It's a bit of a spiritual experience. A lot of people, and that's just not just me, that people will generally, like real fans will describe it that way. People will come from all over the country and all over the world and say like, oh my God, this is like walking to, like I visited cathedrals in Paris and I walked into Fenway Park and it feels the same way. You know, so it's like for them, it's like they there's just a, you can't help but have this, you know, feel the energy in the building. It's the energy. I can't describe it. It's the energy. You know, and again, all those historical, like again, that helps too. If you're there looking for that and all that stuff, you know, stuff all you can read and the stuff you can see, like, but it's in the air. You know, it's the smells. This is like it's just it's a you're not going to get more authentic baseball experience. And I don't just say that because I'm a you know, a homebody, you know, but it's, you know, maybe at Wrigley, I won't take anything away from Wrigley, but I still think Fenway is just more genuine. So it's an experience. It's an atmosphere. And
Cool.
you feel like you've stepped back into take me out to the ball game. I need to go get, you know, peanuts and Cracker Jacks right now. You know, like that's the feeling it gives you. So
Well, Ryan, thank you very much for talking with us. It was great hearing all your thoughts about Fenway Park. A big thanks to Ryan Matthews for all that information. A little bit about what to do in Boston in between your games. Now, everyone has their own interests, and there's plenty to do in Boston. It's a big city. So if you like history, you know, your Freedom Trail is a great walk visiting all those sites. If you're not into walking, I really enjoy the duck boat tours. Those duck boats are some of the most famous tours in all of the United States. I looked that up once. What was the most famous or most well-reviewed tours? And the three tours that came up that I saw on TripAdvisor that I still remember were the Skyscraper Boat Tour in Chicago, the Duck Boat Tour in Boston, and then the Alcatraz Island Tour in San Francisco. So those are great. So I recommend a duck boat tour. Also, speaking of tours, like we said, Fenway Park Tour is got to be on your list. Make sure you do that while you're in town. And if you're really a big ballpark fan, not too far from Fenway, down Commonwealth on the T, the B line, get off at Babcock Street, you can go to Boston University's football field, Nickerson Field. The ticket office is from the old Braves field, so you'll be able to see that as well. That's our show today. Once again, thank you to Ryan for joining us and telling us all about Fenway and his experiences. Next week, we'll be on to another ballpark as we get closer and closer to 30. Until then, this is Jacob Russell Snyder saying, next week, we'll be on to another ballpark as we get closer and closer to 30. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Ballpark Road Trip. If you like what you hear, feel free to follow the show on Instagram at Tours with Jacob. If you would like to get in touch with the show, you can send us a message on Instagram or feel free to email us at tourswithjacob@gmail.com. We'd love to hear any recommendations you have for your home ballpark. You can send us an audio recording by using your voice memo app on your smartphone and emailing it to tourswithjacob@gmail.com. Please keep your suggestions and recommendations to a minute or less, but feel free to send as many as you'd like. We'll make sure to get them on the show at some point. Thanks for listening. See you next time.